Hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show, The Big Show, the most exciting and entertaining and critically acclaimed podcast that is recorded in our living room, because we're in the living room today because it's winter, and winter's out there, the ice and snow, and it stinks. How's that?
Bleh.
She's got the resistance band on her foot now.
Because otherwise I'd just be sitting here still, and I'm not very good at sitting still.
Welcome to the show. And we have another mystery episode, in case you heard the Resistance Band. If you hear the Resistance Band episode at some point in time, these two shows are being recorded at the same on the same day. So I was just doing the Resistance Band, now she is, so now you know what we're talking about. It's a mystery show, because she doesn't know the topic of what we're talking about today. But I do.
Yep.
And so she's just going to, if she doesn't know the answer, she's going to make stuff up. Because you never know with this one. She can talk all day about just about any subject, whether she knows anything about it or no. I'm the same.
I was born to be on the internet, I guess.
Yes, you don't live probably within 50 miles of anybody listening to this, which makes you an expert. That's what makes you an expert, you know, not living within 50 miles of.
Then we are beautifully suited to be experts on everything.
Yeah, because we don't live within 50 miles of you. Chances are really good. So, welcome to the show. Today we're here to talk about Ebola.
Ebola.
Ebola. Not just Ebola, though, because Ebola is kind of a way too specific subject to really worry about prepping-wise in America, and I know some people will freak out when they say, oh my gosh, Ebola. No, not Ebola is not an American problem at this point in time, and I don't anticipate it ever becoming one.
Yeah, it's not high on my risk list.
Having said that, there are many lessons to be learned from the Ebola crisis. And one of them is something that kind of hits home to us here in the United States. And that is the subject of an article she just wrote about who do you trust? Who do you trust when it comes to information about infectious and communicable diseases and information in general about disaster situations. So I'm going to turn that over to you, and you can just spill the bean.
Well, where this post came from is I've been taking a free online course produced by the Harvard Global Health Institute. The title of the course is Lessons from Ebola, Avoiding the Next Pandemic. And it was taking a look at the big Ebola outbreak they had in West Africa in 2014 and 2015, looking at what went right in the response, looking at what went wrong in the response, seeing what we could learn from that to reduce the chances of, reduce the frequency of that kind of epidemic or pandemic situation in the future.
Okay, now, it's important to realize that this is not old stuff. I mean, we're talking about stuff that's being done in the iPhone world, in the modern internet world, where communication exists, but not everywhere.
Communication is, to the major cities in Africa, is just as easy as communication to most places in the U.S. Lots of people have cell phones. They use them for internet connection. They can get lots of information there. They don't have electricity in a lot of the outlying rural areas where the epidemic started. And a lot of these places don't have any healthcare framework to speak of in those places. At the time when the outbreak happened, one of the countries had 50 physicians in the whole country, which on a population basis rounded out to about the same as Boston, Massachusetts, having 15 doctors for the entire city. So very little in the way of resources there, and the outbreak of Ebola got out of hand, and it spread to three different countries in a major way and lots of other countries in a minor way. It infected tens of thousands of people. It killed more than 10,000. We don't know how many more, because, frankly, a lot of people didn't trust the government, didn't trust the health workers. And so when they got sick, they got as far away from what health care there was as possible.
Now, there's several caveats that we need to talk about here. And I think the first and most obvious is there's a lot of us here in the U.S. that don't trust our government very much. And we're not going to make this a political podcast, but I'm just saying there's a lot of people that don't trust our government very much. But compared to, like, the government of Liberia, I mean, you know, it's a whole different
level. We got a lot more effective watchdogs, let's put it that way.
Yeah, they're not really... When it comes to watchdogs, they are like a little plastic dog on the head of a Pez dispenser. You know, you open it up and a Pez comes out. That's how much of a watchdog they really are. And there's a lot of other reasons that the people don't trust the government in Liberia. I mean, it's just the civil war and, I mean, all that kind of stuff. Another caveat is Ebola, when properly treated, properly handled, when you actually have proper medical supplies and medical training, is not that dangerous as far as the spread goes. It's hard to spread.
Not hugely hard, but not nearly as easy as people imagine.
Right. I mean, it's not like the flu, which is much easier to spread. So there's that caveat, too. So don't really freak out so much about Ebola. It's not too much the disease, but it spreads so big for many reasons. And that's what this is about. She mentioned something about this in a previous story. But the thing about Ebola isn't it's really hard to spread or relatively hard to spread. But it's apparently just as hard or even harder to figure out that it is Ebola in the first place.
If you're living in somewhere with endemic malaria, which these Ebola looks a heck of a lot like malaria in the early stages. And it looks a lot like some of the other diseases they've got roaming around down there. Because the first presentations are these really specific things like nausea and vomiting and fever. Oh boy, that's helpful, right?
And especially when... You know, there's no real way to do lab tests. You don't have health workers who know what to look for. And even if they did, it really does look like a lot of these other third world diseases.
And when we say health workers in these villages, we don't mean physicians.
No.
We don't even mean nurses.
No.
We mean some local caring individual who has learned a few things from a nurse or from a doctor. And is combining that with a bunch of local knowledge, some of which is really good and some not so much. And there's not a lot of training there. So where the trust issue comes in is once they did figure out they had an epidemic, it started over in Guinea. And they started putting the word out, okay, we've got an Ebola epidemic. And we need to have these infection control measures so we can not spread Ebola all over the place. So some of the things we want you to do are quit shaking hands with everybody you meet. Because that is the social greeting. Your best friend, your newest friend, your casual acquaintance you're going to buy something from. You shake hands with everybody, apparently, in Liberia when you meet them. Don't shake hands so much. Make sure you wash with soap and water. Wash your hands with soap and water and, you know, basic hygiene kinds of things. And frankly, there was a whole lot of distrust when the word first came out. At first, there was a lot of, the health workers are just making this up. We don't have any Ebola. We're in West Africa. That's a Central Africa thing. And until this time, it always had been a Central Africa thing. This was the first outbreak in West Africa. So they didn't believe it. Why not? I cannot think of one way anybody would benefit by making people think there was an Ebola epidemic when there wasn't. So it didn't even make sense that anybody would make up this story. So all I can think of is that they didn't want to believe it, and therefore in their minds it must not be true.
There's
We've never had it before, we don't want it now, we must not have it now.
That is about as human a thing as there is.
Yeah.
They were living in denial, even though that's a different part of Africa.
So a lot of people didn't believe there was an epidemic at all. And when individuals started showing the symptoms, they'd get the fever and they'd get the nausea and the vomiting. They would just pass it off and tell themselves they had a touch of malaria or something. There was some willing suspension of disbelief there, or willing suspension of belief in spite of evidence. Didn't want to believe there was an epidemic at all. And then when they did believe there was an epidemic, one of the things, the health messages that the people were pushing is, if you know anybody who's showing these signs and symptoms, you gotta bring them to the Ebola treatment centers so we can take care of them. And if you look at the post I wrote for this up on 3BY, it's linked to a neat little video Salty found. It was put out by the Red Cross, Red Crescent, and UNICEF, which, in my opinion, did not have any deep conspiracy motives for putting this out. I have no doubt they were trying to do their best for people. And they were encouraging people to bring sick people to the Ebola treatment centers rather than try and take care of them at home. Because the way you catch Ebola is mostly by caring for somebody else who has Ebola. Caring for them while they're sick, caring for them after they're dead. Those are the two main ways you catch Ebola. Most likely ways. So they want you to bring them to the Ebola treatment centers to reduce the spread of disease rather than taking them home to your home village and having all 15 people who come to the funeral get Ebola. That happened several times. So they want you to bring them to the Ebola treatment centers, and they've got this little video out there to encourage people to do that. And the West Africans did not want to bring their people to the Ebola treatment centers because what they had figured out is they were good at containing the people who had Ebola there to reduce the spread of disease, but they did not have the resources and they did not have the people to actually care for the persons who were, well, let's just say incarcerated there. They'd bring you in and they'd give you a bed and they'd do their best, but their best was frankly not very good at the beginning of the epidemic. There was very little care available and there was a very high mortality rate. And if you think of how it would be if somebody you loved had that fever, maybe they've got malaria, maybe they've got Ebola. Do you want to take them there? Do you want to leave them at a place like that where you think they're not going to get good care, but they're just going to be held there until
they die?
Among all the sick people, until they either get it and die or get better and eventually get released. Well, if you care for that person, you're probably only going to take them home and care for them yourself. And that's what a lot of people did.
And that's why a lot of people died.
And that's why a lot of people died. If you are the one who's got the fever, you want to tell yourself that maybe it's malaria, and I'll just move one village over where they don't know me, and I'll just rent a little place, or I'll stay with my cousin or something like that. It's probably not Ebola anyway, and if I go there, I'm going to be around a whole bunch of sick people. I'm definitely going to get it then if I don't have it now. You're going to want to go to that treatment center? Nah, you don't want to go. So you're going to go to your cousins in the next village over, and now the next village has an outbreak of Ebola. So the people did not trust the Ebola treatment centers in the early stages of the disease. And as it turned out, there was a good reason for their lack of trust. There just wasn't very good care available in those places. Most of the Western aid workers, a lot of them who got Ebola actually survived it because they air-flighted them out to hospitals with good care.
And, you know, a lot of people do actually survive. Ebola, when well cared for, is not a death sentence. It's still a gravely serious disease. But it's not like a 95% of the people die. If they're cared for, kept hydrated, you know, go through the procedure, the processes, given medications to keep the other stuff from killing them, like the pneumonias and the,
yeah, you know. Opportunistic infections. So the people didn't trust the Ebola treatment centers, and that was a big factor in the spread of the disease. The governments were trying to keep people from moving country to country. And it worked really well with the airlines because the airlines quit flying in and out of these countries, which was its own problem because you couldn't get personal protective equipment and gloves and doctors and stuff in. But it didn't manage to contain the disease because all you need to do to transmit the disease to the next country over is have one guy on foot who's maybe just a little feverish right now. And instead of walking over to the Ebola treatment center, he walks over to the border to the next country on this two-lane cow path where they don't have any real guards, visits a village there, and poof, you've got an outbreak started there. So when governments put out information, there was two lines of things going on. In this particular outbreak, this Ebola outbreak, the governments were kind of split between we want to get the word out and make it sound as serious as possible to get people to pay attention to this in the areas where we don't have it yet. We want them to be really careful. We want them to do the control measures. So we're going to cast it as this big, big serious deal, even though we're not there yet. And on the flip side of the coin, when the audience was different, they would downplay the seriousness of the disease because they didn't want to lose the foreign investments. They didn't want all the foreign workers to go home. They didn't want the foreign businesses to shut down. This Ebola epidemic was an economic disaster for the involved countries because nobody would trade with them and all their foreign investment got as far away from the disease as possible by going elsewhere. So the word that was out there was slanted very heavily in terms of what it is that the people putting out the information wanted you to believe about it. It wasn't just, here is the truth as best we know it. It was, I want you to not leave, so I'm going to downplay it, or I want you to be careful, so I'm going to talk it up. It's difficult to know.
In other words, the governments were speaking out of both sides of their mouths.
Yeah. And of course, the people were talking to each other and spreading stories. And the vast majority of those were a big fat bucket of lies because people didn't know. And you know how people are. They just talk. Whether they know, know something or not, they'll take some little shred of evidence and get entirely convinced their opinion must be true and spread it far and wide as if it were gospel.
Yeah. There's this one guy, he had Ebola stuff, but they kept him at home and he got better. Turns out the guy had malaria and he got over the attack, you know, but they don't know the difference, that kind of stuff.
Do you trust going to the healthcare facilities when there's a bunch of people with Ebola around? A lot of people didn't. And there were more people killed by the increases in malaria and maternal deaths and childbirth deaths and early infant deaths from lack of vaccines. Those killed more than the 11,000 people that Ebola killed in this epidemic, because people were staying away from healthcare facilities once they realized they did have an epidemic.
I mean, people here in America were staying away from when healthcare workers were flown in infected. You know, people were staying away from the hospitals that had them in isolation,
which was ridiculous. You're having chest pains and you're staying away from a hospital because there's one person in that hospital with Ebola. You have just made a terrible risk management assessment.
Yes, you have.
And it's been based on fear rather than logic.
But, you know, how many people are really good at risk management decisions? Turns out not very many.
Yeah, humans are bad at that in general, especially when it's something really in your face and scary like Ebola, which is a bad enough disease when you are perfectly factual. But it's even worse once you let the media get hold of it and they, you know, start taking their clips from Hot Zone, the book, and things like that. So, yeah, the health providers were doing their best, and they were being as honest as anybody in this whole story. The places where they had the most success were the places where they already had an underlying trust with the population, where they did have somebody with reasonable training who'd been there taking care of people. And that person would say, hey, look, there is Ebola over there in the capital. We do have to do these things to be careful. Those efforts were successful. But when you had strangers coming in, say, I'm from the government, I'm here to protect you.
Yeah, I'm from the government.
People were not
I'm
believing
here to help.
It. And in some cases, there were good reasons for that.
Yeah, does that really? Especially, again, this is a different level, too, because, I mean, there's a lot of mistrust of the U.S. government, but the Liberian government? I mean, really? Is there even one at the moment? You know, which warlord is in charge of it at the moment? I mean, some of these other, the Central African ones like the Congo and stuff like that are just basically war zones and have been for years. So, yeah, it's a bad deal. It's a really bad deal. But, sorry, I had yawned. Okay.
Health workers were doing their best, but their focus is public health rather than personal well-being. Governments tend to slant the information in ways that suits their audience at the time. random people who have no real reason to deceive you are often completely wrong and can't be trusted despite the fact that they're really good people and they make good barbecue.
So having
some underlying knowledge yourself so you can sort out what's plausible and what's not, given what you already know, is about the best fence you got.
All righty then. Have you got anything else for us today?
Yeah, that's basically what I had.
Okay. Well, since I'm going to talk you into wrapping my very sore ankle right now after I finished my exercises, I'm going to hang up the podcast and we're going to see if I can talk you into that. I'll have to be real nice. I'll have to pay in chocolate because that's how I have to pay. I pay in chocolate.
Sometimes with peanut butter in it.
Sometimes with peanut butter in it. She's not proud. She's not proud. She'll take peanut butter. She'll take no peanut butter. She kind of likes the peanut butter. Yeah. Okay, we'll talk to you later.